QSC, QSC. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net, 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, plus offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. All right, hearing none there. Topic for the evening will be pulled from February's QST. And very good little miniature article on avoiding problems in your RF chain. Pretty good about all the little different things that can pop up between your radio and the antenna. Little basic things, four items there that, you know, need to be checked once in a while. Make sure they're all up to snuff. All right, I will now call our little brief roster here. Hold up. And first on the list is WB6CLZ, Mike in Placentia.
Evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. This is WB6CLZ in Placentia.
Hey, Mike, got a good solid signal this evening. Sounding good. How about WB6CIN, Cindy?
This is WB6CIN.
Well, good evening there, Cindy. Glad to have you out there. How about KA6CIA, George, Lucerne Valley?
Hi, good evening, Tom, KA6CIA.
All right, George, glad to have you with us. I know Harry and Nancy are out there, but I know he wasn't able to get in the repeater today, so we'll have to check them in later. Next I have here is KJ6HZS, Mike, in Fonskin.
Dave and Tom, and that's KJ6HZS, no traffic.
Okay, Mike, and courtesy check-in for your dad if he's listening of K6EKX on his scanner there. Thanks, Mike, for being out there. How about KJ6FIL, Mike in Redlands?
Good evening, Tom, and everybody else out there, KJ6FIL.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you being out there. I bet you're enjoying the weather down there as much as we are up here. KJ6KDL, Jim in Sugarloaf.
It's KJ6KDL here. Almost slept through. I woke up just in time.
Jim, you got to stop working 24/7 there, that's all. How about KJ6KDK, Rosemary?
Oh, this is KJ6KDK here, still awake.
Alrighty, thanks for being out there, Rosemary. Let's try W6GZI, Frank. Nothing heard. How about KI6IQA, Kelly? And nothing heard. How about K6GVL, Ron from Green Valley?
Good morning, Tom. Good morning. Silly me. Good evening, Tom and Lynette. This is Ron from Green Valley Lake, K6GVL.
Well, that's okay, Ron. It probably is morning someplace, as they say. Not a problem. Glad to have you out there, Ron from Green Valley. How about 86PL, Harold from Riverside?
Good evening, 86PL.
Harold, glad to have you out there. N6BOP, Ann from Pomona, are you out there? Quinn, nothing heard. How about K6LCS, Quinn from Harupa Valley?
Good evening, Tech Tuesday, Tom and Annette. Got some satellite shorts for you. K6LCS.
All right, Quinn, glad to have you out there. Let's try Judith. I don't know if they're in range here. W6JLM, Judith. Yeah, I think her and Ken are out of range there. Moving on down the list, I have K6YNW, Chris.
Good evening to you in the net, K6YNW.
Well, good evening there, Chris. And I think somebody out there has got his call sign back. It's W6POO, Chip.
I do indeed. Good evening to Tom in the net, W6POO here, and ready for Tech Tuesday.
Hey, Chip, also down there in Palm Springs area, and you guys are hitting the repeater just fine, by the way. How about KD6LAN, Bill? Nothing heard there from Bill. How about AE6CK, Victor? And nothing heard from Victor there. How about KA6ROD, Rod?
Good evening, everyone, KA6ROD.
Good evening there, Rod. Thanks for being out there from Moon Ridge. KB6LCY, Christy, Apple Valley. And nothing heard. How about WA6ITC, Rod?
Yeah, we're out here. WA6ITC in Lake Williams.
Good deal there, Rod. Glad to have you out there. And pretty much got everybody there, I think. Let's see how it is down there in Rancho. WB6PBZ. Ray, are you out there? Nothing heard. And that pretty much has the list as I have it. Anybody out there would like to check in this evening as a guest?
KJ6PYB.
KJ6PYV, doggone it, there is Dave, my neighbor. Glad to have you out there again, Dave. Appreciate that. Anybody else?
KJ6LEF, John. Relents.
KJ6LEF, John there. John, by golly, I've heard you out there before. Glad to hear you back in there. Anybody else? All right, pretty much concludes that, and if anybody, of course, can check in at any point in time, feel free to join in, ask a question, make a suggestion, or make a comment. Not a problem. Well, Mike, we'll start out with our DX report. Couple things there. Had rumors there was like an X2 CME or flare. Mike, what's been happening out there with the sun?
Well, yeah, I think it was last Friday. There was an X1.7. I think it was, that's what they finally came up with, X-class flare that went off. And it looks like we're not going to get anything from it. It's just as it was, the sunspot was going around the opposite side of the sun. So they expected we may have gotten a CME or going to get a CME that was a glancing blow. But I poked around Space Weather just before net time tonight, and it looks like we've got maybe a 1% chance of polar storms from that CME created by the X-class flare. So, probably a non-event. Anyway, there's a cool thing happening, though. Well, let's talk sunspot counts. We have Space Weather is reporting a sunspot number of 76 with a solar flux index of 110. Kind of marginal conditions. MUF has only been getting up to 25, 26 megahertz. So being a 10-meter guy, I haven't been doing much. Plus, my K3's in the shop and just headed back tomorrow, so I'm a happy guy. Anyway, there's a new sunspot number 1413, and it's emerging in the shape of a ring, which is kind of interesting. And I guess they really are kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with the polarities on that. That could produce some pretty neat stuff. Or, it just might be a fizzle out like we've seen on some of the stuff before.
That's about it in a nutshell, Tom. Back to you.
All right, good deal. Well, with all that going on, have you been able to do any DX work, or have you been really shut down without your K3?
Playing a little bit of QRPCW, but I really haven't. We've had some other stuff going on that we had to pay attention to, so that's where it's been at. Naturally, I'll have to plug that thing and check it out tomorrow, so we'll see what's going on. Want to give it a good workout. Okay, that's about it, Tom. Haven't been doing much around here in the way of ham radio. Back to you.
Comment.
Okay there. Chris, go ahead.
Yes, on net last night, Glenn, WB6RLC, said on 40 meters he's working South America like gangbusters, and a good part of Europe too, of Asia too, and he says the deal is he stays up to 11, 12, 1 o'clock, and that's when this activity happens. In his case, he's using digital, running about 60 watts. So just for a comment there, K61W.
Well, good deal there, Chip. Chris, K6YNW. Yeah, always appreciate any DX report from anybody out there. And Mike usually just gets it started. Anybody else out there with any cool DX reports, please come back.
LCS inquiries. I've actually been doing the DX on 40 meters, and it starts to roll in around 11:30, 12 o'clock, as Chris just said. But on sideband, just around the entry point for general frequencies on sideband, the shadow line, so that's about the time I start getting Spain call letters and such. And it's not real strong, but as the time ticks forward, about actually 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning our time, Spain and Italy and France get real strong.
Okay, well, Chip, good deal there. Appreciate that. And right next to you there was K6LCS. Go ahead there, Clint.
K6LCS, Tom, could you please define for us CME and an overview? Do these conditions affect our line of sight 2 meter 440 work here on the ground?
Okay, your audio was just a little weak there. Was that the definition of CME?
Yeah, could you please define for us all what CME is, and does any of this sunspot activity affect us in our 2 meter 440, 220 work, our line of sight work here on the ground?
I would say, now, as far as the line of sight work, even tropospheric ducting and sporadic E, I think, has got a lot more with conditions, you know, atmospheric conditions, maybe a little ionospheric stuff there. The CME stands for coronal mass ejection, and basically there's a lot of turbulence always going on in the sun, and at some point in time, either the gravity or the forces there that are pretty much containing these huge loops that are coming out and feeding back into the sun literally erupt. But it would be like a volcano in Hawaii erupting to the moon. I mean, it's just an awesome amount of distance that these things shoot out. Maybe not quite that far in retrospect to the, you know, in respect to the scale. However, when that does happen, we have a huge amount of radiation, as in X-rays, particles, positrons. I may be mistaken on that. But anyway, the particles get here usually 3 to 5 days later. The X-rays get here like 8 minutes later. And when one of these happens, it can be pointing to the Earth or it can be pointing away. And I think what Mike was saying, this one, the sun, it was not pointing at us. The last one we had, it was, and has a lot of good effects of changing radio propagation and aurora borealis. But, I'm not sure. I don't think it really has as much influence on the VHF spectrum. I hope that answers your question there, Clint.
That was great. Thank you.
KF6Q, Tech Tuesday Net, Big Bear Amateur Radio Club Repeater. Anybody else out there with any cool DX? And then we'll transfer the mic over there to Quinn. One more shot for DX reports.
Another comment?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I should have mentioned that Glenn W6RLC is using a vertical antenna, K61W.
That's pretty awesome, too, because a lot of, I'm going to say a lot of the radiation patterns will vary between a horizontal and a vertical, but I've heard once it gets way out there, it doesn't matter as much, so. All right, any other comments before we get the HamSat report?
You hear, Tom?
Yeah, go ahead.
This mic, WB6CLZ. Just one thing that I didn't cover is if you go to Space Weather and dig around in there, they had reported seeing auroras in Payson, Arizona. Now, they weren't visual, but when they viewed the camera images, it was viewed through a camera, afterwards, they saw the green aura, the green glow of the auroras at Payson, Arizona from some of these last CMEs and some of the last flares that have gone off. So with that in mind, as things progress, you know, we may be seeing something up in Big Bear on a visual level here as this cycle 24 progresses. We'll just keep our fingers crossed and see what's going on. Then we could do some VHF aurora propagation down here down south. That would be cool.
Oh, good deal there. I know we did the propagation thing here pretty in-depth over the last few weeks, but... yeah, that would be pretty cool. Up here in Big Bear, really clear air most of the time, if not all the time. And you don't have to worry about that getting in the way. So, great. That's incredible. Arizona. Wow. All right. Quint, K6LCS, what's happening on the satellite front out there?
Good evening, Tech Tuesday. This is K6LCS. Well, we had a great time Saturday at the Palm Springs Desert Rats Hamfest, a couple passes of SO50. The last one was actually about a half hour after the fest officially ended, but there are plenty of stragglers and vendors left to come over and watch us as we work. We work Mexico, Texas, Colorado, Ontario, California, and Patrick, EWK Patrick, came out from Arizona, and he was on his way home, pulled over to the side of the road, I think, and worked this on the way home. So that was a great show. Stand by for a second. I want to thank a bunch of BBARC members and everyone else who dropped by and said hello. Many of you knew about our upcoming ARISS contact, Amateur Radio Aboard the ISS contact, with Flabob Airport Academy the week of April 16, and want to know how that was progressing. Our website for that is ISS-Flabob.com, ISS-Flabob.com. And Chip was out there, gave us some great stories, and is helping us tremendously on the media front for our event. The fest attendance, it was up for the third year in a row. And the Desert Rats folks are to be commended for pulling off another successful event. You know, in one day, they give attendees about everything that we want out of a ham fest. But the history of the hobby was on display, had a couple seminars. Some of the big equipment vendors were there right alongside the smaller vendors. Your swap meet outside. Honest pricing for good food for breakfast and lunch. Free coffee refills, all for a measly $2 admission. Free parking. Many RVs were there. Folks arrived a couple days early, stayed overnight on Saturday, and the weather was spectacular. So mark this, the last Saturday in January 2013, a lot of events happened that day all over the region, but boy, Desert Rats and their Hamfest on Palm Springs. Make sure you get there next year. On the satellite end of things, working the birds with a handheld radio. We still have AO27 up there, SO50, and Packet is back on the ISS. When the ISS is in a mission to restock it, one of those progress unmanned missions, or when we send crews up or bring crews down, they turn off all the amateur equipment. So last week, the amateur equipment was off, but the Packet is back up. So if you're working Packet, the ISS is back for you. Also, the ISS was repositioned, remaneuvered a little bit to avoid some nonsense, so make sure that you update your Keplerian data at least weekly if you're going to be working the ISS. Tom, that's all I've got, unless anybody has any questions. K6LCS.
Okay, Clint, I appreciate that. Yeah, there was a couple of us up here in Big Bear who weren't able to make it down there. Myself, I was one of those. But sounded like everybody had a pretty good time out there. A couple people that were there. Of course, we had our club meeting that afternoon and evening, and had a lot of prep work we had to do for that. So I was pretty much tied here. A good deal. Anybody out there with any questions regarding with the satellite report, please come back. Okay, hearing none. Proceeding on here. Tonight we're pulling from the February QSD 2012, avoiding problems in the RF chain. This was an article written by W1HEO. Pretty cool. This was referred to me by Mike, WB6CLZ, and Mike, appreciate that for digging this up. Well, Mike, this is really cool. I mean, it's not a real long article, but it's really in-depth with the main things we got to worry about here or think about or check out with our radio and antenna and tuners and all that good stuff. And Mike, what's the first thing I guess you'd say catches your eye in this article is obviously very good. We're going to go over all four and I'll help you with that there. But what would you say that's probably the best thing about this article?
Wow. Yeah, well, I just spent probably half an hour or so reading it in depth. Now, not that I retained all of that, but anyway, the thing that is really cool is, you know, you can get some losses in connectors, you get losses in coax feed line, you know, anything in your antenna RF chain from the rig to the antenna. Tuners, every little thing is in series, you know, and is additive. So if you've got a half a dB here, a half a dB there on poor connections, that all adds together, and you can have a major problem if you've got some things going wrong in your RF chain. That's the nutshell, but now let's get into the nitty-gritty. Back to you, Tom.
What page is that again? Case going to be?
Yes, go ahead, Chris.
What page is that? I just picked up my February. K6 wind to be.
It starts on page 30. It's 30, 31, and I believe 32. So that'll get you some direction on the magazine there. You know, Mike, I think the one thing that once you get everything working, I mean, we all, at one time or another, set up a station or worked with somebody setting up a station, and you got all this stuff. You got your antenna, you got your coax, you got your tuners, you got your connectors, all the way, maybe antenna switches, all this gear, or maybe not quite all that much, but most of that. And once you get it all up and running, I see here where they recommend kind of check out your SWR rate, write some stuff down, and, you know, SWR is really most of an effect, but not showing the cause, but that'll give you a tip that something, when it does start to go wrong, then time to check stuff out. But out of the four things, the connectors, and that's probably the first on the list here, and pretty cool. Looked up some stuff on that too, by the way. Connectors, your basic connectors. Sometimes you have more than one. Sometimes that adds up. Mike, what would you like to add in there about the connectors?
A couple of things, Tom. One of the things is I have never used pliers to tighten a connector. I always connect or tighten them finger tight as I can get. And, you know, that's usually done it for me. They recommend tightening them with pliers. That's probably a good thing. The other thing is I had no idea that end connectors were both 50 and 75 ohms. They recommend not mixing the 50 and 75 ohm type of end connectors. Not only can you have damage, but you have losses there. Just a couple of things that I noticed right off the top.
Yeah, Yeah, and I see that. I think actually the 50 and 75 are slightly different, but I guess one could be forced into the other. It would cause a little bit of damage there. But that's a very good point there. I think most of us do use UHF connectors, which PL259s plug, PL for plug, or SO239, SO for socket. Pretty good way to remember that. Thing is, though, they're not really a good 50-ohm throughout connector. I mean, they'll work. They are workable. But they have a little bit of a bump there. They're not maintaining that 50-ohm impedance throughout the connector. So you get a little loss there. And I think that's really not a lot if you only have one or two. But like we said, they add up. And Mike, as an example, just pick any type of antenna system you have, either down there or up here. And mentally, you know, how many connectors do you have? I mean, you would think, okay, we got one, radio, second one, antenna. Generally not that way, though. Mike, how many would you say is an average?
Just looking here, I have the rig. I have the antenna tuner. Then it goes to an antenna switch. Then up in the attic, I know I have a barrel connector at least in one position up there because it's coax that's joined together as 50 feet, which I haven't been up in the attic and checked for a while. So there's two more connectors, and then a connector at the antenna. So, I mean, that's, I didn't get a count, but there's more than I thought.
Yeah, I'm going to say easily over half a dozen or more. And the thing is that when those are made up and you're soldering those up, it's very important to do a good job because you're going to rely on that. You're going to say, okay, you know what? This is something. It's done. I did it right. And I'm not even going to worry about that. However, quite often, and especially on the ones that are outdoors, that's probably the first thing that goes. You'll get moisture in there or corrosion. Or maybe there was a soldering thing you did with the connector, and it wasn't really quite right. It was okay for a while, but then after a period of time, it developed a little corrosion in there and stuff. Next thing you know, it's like, well, you got about six or eight connectors spread out over maybe 100 to 200 foot of coax, and it's just not that it can't be fixed or traced down, but I know you don't want to get up in that attic. Back to you, Mike.
I got some neat stuff up there. I'm going to get up there one day, and when I do, I will check that out. The other thing that they recommend, too, is tape and then self-sealing tape and then more tape. I, as an electrician, only use Scotch 33 Plus. I mean, that's the only thing that goes through my hands. I'm stuck with it, and I like it, and it's got just the right stretch and all that. But there are several types of self-sealing tape. The one that I'm most familiar with is the rubberized type, but I know that I have another one around here. It's kind of a reddish, and then there's another kind of a grayish. You stretch it, and it seals itself and kind of vulcanizes together. That's probably your center tape, and then, again, they say just take another layer of, well, I use Scotch 33, but electrician's tape and seal the top on that. That gives you a pretty good seal from weather.
You know, and I think the, like I said, with the one outdoors is the one you really want to seal up, and you may have more than one of those depending on what you have. You know, that's just something that you want to really seal up from moisture. The little bit of moisture in there just makes everything go haywire. Neat little thing here, too, especially if you do VHF and UHF stuff, HF's probably not as critical. Get up in the VHF and UHF higher frequencies. End connectors are a little more expensive, but they maintain a nice, clean 50 ohms throughout, or 75, depending on the, you know, which one it is. Looked up a couple things through a couple of suppliers, and basically the end connectors are going to cost you about 2 to 2.5 times as much, and that's apples for apples, you know, silver-plated Teflon cores and everything, same-o. But the end connector, much cleaner, and as you start adding up these connectors, if you did have more than one, the end connectors, of course, are going to have less loss. And, of course, the worst thing to do is to put an adapter from an end connector to a UHF to coax. You're best off cut off the UHF connector, go straight with end connectors. Mike, anything to add before we move on to the second, item number two?
I think the sealing is a good thing, and yeah, end connectors probably a good thing for VHF and UHF. The interesting thing that I noticed tonight, those connectors will handle up to 11 gigahertz, and if you get some specialized ones, 18 gigahertz. Kind of interesting, and they will handle up to 500 watts at 2 gigahertz, 5 kW at 20 megahertz. So I think pretty rugged, pretty good one to go with. Back to you, Tom.
Yeah, I think... Actually, I think above 18, well, you're talking about 1.8 gigahertz and 2 gigahertz. I think that's what you were saying. And beyond that, things get a little dicey for that type of connector. But anybody out there with any questions or any comments on this, please come back.
Hey, WA6ITC.
WA6ITC, yes, Rod, go ahead.
My only comment on connectors over the years is, be sure if you're going to use a connector that it is either silver or gold plated. Many, many problems can come from those nickel plated connectors. WA6ITC.
That's a very good point there. One of the many out there, I did look up through DX Engineering, very good company, as are HRO, AEC, a lot of them out there that carry all these connectors. Primarily, I don't think they carried anything except for silver-plated. It kind of points you in one direction right there, right off the bat. So, good point there, Ron. Anybody else out there, any comments or questions, please come back. All right. Well, Mike, moving on to accessories, the second part of the link after we get through the connectors. Accessories. What are accessories? Purse? Bracelet? Shoes? Wait a minute. Okay, no, that's wrong. Accessories. Go ahead, Mike.
Was must have the belt, too. Anyway, well, they're talking about antenna tuners. They're talking about, and people don't use them as much anymore. Some of the guys with the vintage HF rigs use low-pass filters. The newer rigs are pretty clean, so we don't generally use those. Coax switches, both indoor and outdoor. Remote coax switches are a big easy thing to save coax costs, like if you're using hardline or something like that. That sort of thing, inline types things, and they all add up. We'll start talking about some of the problems you can have with that. Back to you, Tom.
Well, you know, all this stuff is probably, and we're going to assume, working pretty good when it's brand new and installed. And like anything, has wear and tear as you use it. Maybe this year it's fine. 2 years, 3 years down the road, maybe you're not noticing, but your SWR is building up there, and next thing you know, or your loss is basically building up. Antenna tuners, as one example, worn or dirty switch contacts. You've got different things there where you've got a roller inductor, or you've just got contacts where it's an automatic tuner, and you've got relays in there. Some of this stuff will eventually starts to corrode. So even though it's good brand new, it's not going to last forever. So that's one of the many. And let me reset here real quick. And this is KF6Q on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater with Tech Tuesday. And Mike, besides that, what's another one there? That's antenna tuners are one. What happens with a couple of the other ones there?
For instance, the antenna switches, either the remote or the type that you switch by hand or, you know, whatever. I have a for instance here, and I think we've talked about this on Tech Tuesday before. I had one that I've had in the shack for years and years and years, and it sat there, and, you know, I just switch it. Actually, it switches my Yagi to my vertical. And it's a manual. I switched it by hand. Somehow we had got moisture or some sort of oxidation in the feed line, and I was getting a poor signal on my vertical. It just wouldn't work right now. So I went out and I put radio for the lawn. I did all this stuff, which in the end helped me anyway. But as it turned out, I took the coax off of the switch
and the thing was just oxidized on the outer shell just terribly. I fixed that, put a new connector on, and by golly, after I put the radios and did all that, that thing like hears like no tomorrow. So yeah, antenna switches is a biggie, and it can be internal or like I just mentioned, something on the connector.
You know, and I think one thing to test stuff, of course, with all the radio equipment shut down, you can actually do a DC test, basically read for resistance with an ohmmeter, and it should be 0.000, period. Well, maybe not quite that last zero. there's going to be something in there. But it you know, that's one way to check that out. And if you're installing new gear, you know, or you're about to install used gear, that's one thing you want to check out. And write down that information. Get a little logbook, write this stuff down. Maybe a year or two from now when you suspect something like that, or like what you did, you didn't really know where that was coming from. You say, well, let's check this out. Oh, wait a minute, this is not right. It may save you a lot of headache and time there. So anyway, well, let's move on to the next one here, but we'll see if anybody with any questions about the antenna gear or tuners or stuff like that. Please come back to KF6Q.
Quick comment on the antenna tuners.
Yeah, Chip, go ahead.
Hey, Tom, I just recently ran into this. I run an AT230. It's a Kenwood antenna tuner, and it's probably 25, 30 years old, like the CS520S that I have matched to it. The switches inside, I don't know, you know, where it's been with it before I bought this. But they've been cleaned with an older style of pot cleaner, and they leave a residue, and over the years the residue starts to break down and to make the switches get dirty and such, and they'll just reset. And so I got some new, today's pot cleaner, and the contact cleaner is, it cleans as well as protects, and so I went in there, and I noticed with a bird meter that I was borrowed from a friend that I was actually getting some dirty contact switching back and forth between forward and reverse readings on this antenna tuner. And so it's just an example of an older piece of equipment, probably 30, 40 years old, that had been cleaned, but the actual process of cleaning had left some residue over the years. The residue on those contacts had built up and it caused the problem that you were talking about.
Well, good deal. That's a very good point there. Yeah, and that's, like you say, another one of the causes of what can really mess things up there. So anybody else with any comments before we move on to item three? All right, we can always go back on this stuff later if we need to. Third of four is the coaxial cable, third link. Now, coaxial cable, there is a very, very tricky thing, number one. You want to make sure you have the right cable for what you're doing for the frequency band. And this is one place where cost, if you go out there and price coax, you're going to see that it's all over the board, different prices. And this is, there's a quote in here from Bill Orr, really nice guy, except he is silent key. Reminded us at one time that it's very easy to make cheap coax. That's easy to do. But it will bite you. Mike, any comments starting out here on the coax thing?
It's all related to money. It's all related to the price of copper. And the more copper in the shield, generally the better the coax. Now we have other things such as velocity factor, which is due to the internal insulation, and the size of the center conductor and such. But you know, I think we should let Jim say a few words too. I know he did quite a bit of research on coax a while back. I don't know. I don't know if he's around tonight or not. I didn't hear anybody if he checked in or not. But yeah, we should let him say a few words about coax because I know he did quite a bit of research on it.
We'll have to see if he's awake. KJ6, KDL, Jim, would you like to add anything about coax and the price of coax?
No, this is KJ6, KDK, and I think he's checked out.
Okay, Rosemary, that's okay. I know he's had a lot of long hours. Not a problem there. And I know I was working with Jim on that, and basically it's just that. You got to make sure that you have the proper coax. Primarily, if you're going to be working with VHF, a little more losses on some of the upper frequencies for some of the other coaxes that are just fine on the HF band. So frequency is a real critical thing there. And once again, coax, if you're going to run 100 feet, try to get 100 foot of coax. Don't put two 50-foot sections together. You've got an extra point there of just waiting to have a problem. Also, if you really want to, you know, you can calculate your loss and guess at that, say, okay, this chart says that, and I'm going to figure this out. If you have access to a watt meter, you can, and a dummy load, of course, you want to set that up. You can do that right out of your transmitter, see what your power ratings are, and then put it out there at the end of the coax before you put it up there on the tower or wherever you're going with that. It'll tell you, there you go, that's, you might have 100 watts at one end, 88 at the other, there you go. You're going to tell you exactly what your loss is. Mike, anything to add to that?
Really good watt meter that is not as expensive as the Bird Trueline is the Bird 611. It's a combination of watt meter and dummy load, and that is a real cool one for making those kind of measurements. Well, since Jim's checked out, information, RT58 at 30 megahertz has a loss of 2.5 dB per 100 feet versus LMR 400, which is 0.7 dB. So you can see the differences you can get with different coax. Back to you, Tom.
Yeah, and to put those numbers, if any of our listeners aren't really familiar with dB, basically it's a proportion of loss or gain. And if we're talking a loss of 1 dB, it represents about 21%. So just 1 dB can be just something that's added up from a bunch of connectors. Not even counting that. So 21%, well, there you go. That would be not 100 watts out. It would be about 79 watts out. If you've got higher losses, 3 dB, and every multiple of 3 is another, is like the 3 dB would be 50%, or half the power. And as you go up, 6 would be 1/4, and then the powers of 2, 9 is 1/8, and so on. But, yeah, it doesn't take much. Next thing you know, you don't have any signal even getting to the antenna. Mike, there's a lot of stuff, and I think, the ARO handbook has a whole bunch of charts in this, don't they?
USL, Tom, either the ARRL handbook or the AARRL antenna book are two ones that are, I would say, if you're going to do any experimentation or really get serious, those two are must-haves.
You know, and also, if you don't have a chance to pick those up, until you do, you can always do a Google search online. You'll find a lot of this information out there. So, pretty neat. But it seems to me like there's so many times that outside coax connector, the shield, you get some kind of corrosion going on in there. And I do believe at our field day last year, one of many, I think Cliff, the vice president of the club, was out there cutting off a little bit off the end, which usually can help, until he got all the way through and he was halfway through a 100-foot piece and said, yes, coax is at it. So moisture must have really traveled down through there. Maybe somebody was running that coax through Big Bear Lake. I'm not sure. Mike, any other comments before we get ready to go on to the fourth and last?
Yeah, I can relate an issue that we had at the 10-meter operating station. As we hooked up, we put coax in, hooked it up to the rig, and it just would not tune up. Then it would tune up, and you'd start talking a bit, and it would just go haywire. Well, in the end, it was just a loose connection, a loose solder connection on the coax connector at the transceiver end of it. And, I mean, just drove us crazy until we thought, okay, jiggled the connector, everything was right, and that took care of it. We just had Cliff solder on a new connector, and everything was good.
YNW.
Yes, Chris, go ahead.
Yep, I use RG8 for VHF and UHF, but the thing is, I don't use 100 feet of it. At RG8, maybe let's say at 2 meters has 2 BDD loss, that'd be a quarter of a dB for 25 feet. And that, to me, that's very manageable. For high frequency, it's a little more liberal there. But anyway, that's my comment, K6YNW.
And that's very good there, actually, to be more, a little bit more economical. If you're not traveling more than 25 feet, you can use something. You just got to keep an eye on how much wash you'll have there. You may not have much at all, and save yourself quite a bit of money there. Typically, the base station I'm using right now, I have about 40 feet just to get from one end of the building to the other. Maybe not 40 feet, probably 30 feet. And then, of course, it's got to go up the tower, or up the mast, I should say, and up to where the antenna is. So it's really funny, but 100 feet, and I don't have any extra left over. So, yeah, if you can get by with less, that's a good thing. I know that I inadvertently ended up with some 8X, which I had two different coaxes coming in, one for HF and one for VHF, and they got switched. And next thing is, I was getting all kinds of losses on the VHF with that 8X. So flipped them around, and the 8X was perfectly fine on the HF band. Let me reset. And another thing, too, if you're going to coax, is going to be out in the weather, trying to make sure that it's black, or which is typical of UV resistant, especially up here in Big Bear, or any place out there where you've got a lot of UVs coming through, more than normal. We have a lot of it up here, so UV resistant, because it'll break that shell down, and that's not a good thing. Any other comments out there, please come back to KF6Q. All right, moving on. Last but not least is feeding the antenna, and that guy can get hungry. Essentially, we'll have an antenna up there, and we're just going to pretend that that antenna is just the best thing in the world. We got to match up to that thing. It's never going to be exactly a perfect match with that to our coax. So many of us out there and have heard the word or know exactly what a balun is, or matching that puppy up to the up to that antenna. Little thing about balans, if you're running one up there to go from coax to a balanced dipole or something like that, you got to be very careful. What's one of the things you got to watch out for there, Mike?
Well, the main thing is just connections. You got to make sure that you have a good connection to that balun. Generally, unless you make a choke-type balun, generally they have a little piece of number 14 stranded wire coming out of them, and you have to hook that up to your antenna and still maintain the tension of the wire on a wire antenna. So, connection is the biggest thing, I would think.
And depending on how you're going to connect that, if you're soldering instead of any other method, which I'm not sure if any other else would be good, remember that heat travels right down that little copper number 14 wire, and you simply might be frying something on the inside, and that's not good. Next thing you know, it's like, well, it worked. It's brand new, but everything inside is toast. Another thing you got to watch out, too, is a lot of the little eye bolts and things like that, that some of this stuff is connected to for tension. Be very careful if you're loosening those. Next thing you know, they can short out and mess up inside. I literally had to take one apart. Things came loose. It was not a pretty picture. Mike, anything else to add?
Generally, what I do with mine is I solder them, and then I put an underground wire nut over that. They're filled with, like, silicone. So you have both the soldering, you have the spring inside the wire net that clamps down on it, and you have the silicone to protect it, too. I've had pretty good luck with that as a connection on a balun.
Okay, good deal. Before we move into, and that's pretty much it for the last one, and then there's some maintenance tips we're going to deal with here real quick. Anybody else to add anything out there on feeding the antenna with balans? Anything else to add? Please come back to KO6Q.
The comment, YNW.
Yes, Chris, go ahead.
Yep. Any connection I make, I solder. the idea is the solder will also keep, you know, corrosion away from it at least longer. K6YNW.
Yeah, good point there. Good point. Anybody else out there with any comments on that?
Comment. Kilo Echo 6 uniform.
Yes, go ahead.
My name here is John. On a ballon, it's very important that you make a, you know, you make a mechanical connection to hold your wire to the little pieces, and you should come back through the loop and then attach to your 14, your number 14 stranded. Also, ballons come in different frequencies, frequency ranges and sizes, and they come in voltage and current. Generally speaking, a current ballon is for a balanced dipole. If you go like an off-center Fed or something like that, you need to go to a voltage ballon. It's designed to handle the higher impedances. And very important to stay with the right ballon because of, in a balanced circuit, a voltage ballon will have a tendency to really overload on you and turn into a big resistor there. Probably generate some heat, so it's important to get the proper ballon. Kilo Echo 6 uniform.
Yeah, Kilo Echo 6 uniform. Yes, in fact, I think, is your name John?
Roger, Roger.
Okay, John, good talking to you. You know what, it's been almost 2 years ago. I used to listen to you on, on Keller there a while back, but good deal, yeah. Another good person out there who's running, or used to be running loops. Good point there, yeah, especially, like you say, you've got, depending on the feed and all that, very important, very critical, and you know what, you, like I said, for most circumstances, you can go to HRO or somebody, and they'll probably have good information on that, but you start deviating from the norm, you're going to have issues there. Anybody else with any comments, please come back.
I have a quick question before we go to the maintenance.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, W6CO here. Is open wire, is that also known as ladder line?
Well, okay. There's, ladder line, there's window line, which is more common now, which has actually got just that. It's got big wide sections of plastic and then big open sections. And then ladder line or open line. Open line could actually be just that. It can have huge, long sections pulled tight. It should be probably in an application where you're going to span a long distance and you know, your gap between it, if it's air, there's almost zero loss. Every time you start adding something besides air, dowels, wood dowels, really good. Window line with the plastic generates a little bit of loss. And actually, but all of those are generally considered to be very, very low loss, even the window line. So, and that's pretty common now to buy. Does that help out?
Yeah, because I was reading the article for the second and third time as we've been progressing for the evening. And I remember one of my Elmers, W6RAG, from Oak Finger High School days, actually. And he was a huge fan of lateral lines because he said it had tremendous dB attenuation in comparison to coax cable. Hard to find back in the day, but it was all over the ham fest, by the way, used open wire and ladder line. I wasn't quite sure if it was the same thing as the window, as they should call it, window line. Thanks for that reference as well.
Yeah, and you know what? I actually made my own, I don't know what kind of line you'd call it, using these little nail-down coax nail-down holders or whatever. And you can remove the two nails, and you can make sure that they're big enough to pull your wire through. Neat little spacers, pretty common. It's a neat project. It's probably a good project for kids, and you know, it's just like to get them involved with stuff like that. I did it once. I don't know if I'd ever really want to do it again, but it was interesting. A lot of work, and it's rewarding to build stuff like that. But anyway, anybody else before we move on?
NW.
Yes, Chris, go ahead.
Yes, I've used some ladder line, not too much actually. But what I did is just have the coax go outside, have the ballon there, the appropriate, and go from there. K6YNW.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. That's actually how I handle my HF feed here, is coax through the attic, so it's not critical what it touches. And then once I get outside, that's pretty much it. A pretty good way to run that stuff, so. Anybody else before we move ahead? Okay, well, it's kind of a wrap-up here of the maintenance tips, and these are actually, as we've talked about, all four of these and what to watch out for. And basically, that's what the maintenance is checking back periodically. Like I said, if you've made an SWR record, hopefully it's very, very low when everything is brand new, kind of a good thing to check and see if all of a sudden it's popped up, changed. It's going to give you, a warning there. It's not going to tell you what it is. That's the bad thing about SWR. It'll tell you something's wrong. It just won't tell you what's wrong. So then you start checking things out. But clean the switch contacts. Here again with contact cleaner, be careful what type you use. Hopefully something that's not going to create a problem later on. Buried cable, if you have buried cable, and I recommend if you are going to bury cable, please use something, you're going to pay more money for it. Use something that's meant to be buried. Mike, real quick, and I know this for a fact, and I know you do, but how many times have you pulled wire out of underground gray conduit that never could get water in it, right?
Is always wet. I don't think I've ever pulled, I mean, even on the driest day, I have never pulled water out of I have never pulled wire out of conduit when it has not been wet. The new 2008 National Electric Code addresses that. Always wet.
And I don't know how that happens. I have put in underground stuff, not an electrician by trade. I know a lot of electricians besides yourself that basically have pretty much will testify that no matter how well it's glued up, how well it's protected from moisture, it just seems to get, the moisture comes from someplace, we're not sure. But, so even if you have it in underground conduit or whatever, still a very, very good idea that it's of the capabilities of being direct burial. If you can't afford that, then try to figure out some way to run it overhead. So, Mike, anything else you want to add on the maintenance side here?
I think you brought it up, Tom, is, you know, check your, not only your SWR, if you have an antenna analyzer, get all the parameters of the antenna after installation and it's working well, and then write that down somewhere. I think that's a good thing. Visually check with an ohm meter, just any way you can on a regular basis, kind of maintain that thing in that way. Make sure nothing's cracked or looks bad or anything like that. Visual is always the best way to start. It's pretty self-explanatory and pretty basic, but maintenance is a big deal on antennas. Back to you, Tom.
And here's a little example here. Mike, I'm not sure if you're aware of what Mickey, WA6FIZ, has been going through here. He's basically got a 75-meter dipole inverted V and an 80-meter inverted V dipole actually crossed, 90 degrees to each other, so he can feed either one. Different coaxes coming down, all coming down to the shack, and basically everything run real clean, and all of a sudden one day it just doesn't tune up. It's not even close. And I guess he tore this all down with some help with another one of the hams of our club there. And they checked everything out. They even put a meter on the far end. They were getting probably about maybe 1 dB loss over 100 feet of coax or more. nothing really bad. Nothing apparent. Checked the connect, I mean the coax, everything was fine. So I don't know, he was going to put it all back together, and it was might be just that magic that it worked. But that's probably why it's good to kind of keep a record of stuff. Further on down the line, if you can, you say, oh, wait a minute, well, that was not this reading, it was something else. So it'll kind of help you narrow that down if something happens. And as we know, none of this stuff lasts forever, so got to keep an eye on that. But anyway, that's just one example here recently what's happening. Anybody else out there, anything to add with maintenance tips or thoughts or suggestions or questions, please come back to KF6Q.
I got a quickie.
There you go. Go ahead.
Well, I talk to the guys every morning on 3935. We've got a morning rag chew at 9 o'clock. When I'm not working, when I'm around, we talk. Mickey was going in and out. He'd be there 1 minute and not there the next. Just for probably the last couple of weeks anyway, maybe more. This morning, 20 over, solid signal. They basically just took it down, tightened everything, and redid the antenna, put it back up, and he has probably one of the best signals on the hill right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I know Saturday night at the meeting, they just really didn't find anything. Everything seemed to be okay. And you know what can happen? It could be, like you say, it could be something that was loose and wasn't noticed while you were taking stuff apart. And then when it got put back together, everything was right where it was supposed to be. So that was the magic. Obviously, something had to be wrong, but probably never know for sure. But the good part is, at least it's all back and running, so good deal there. Well, anybody else with anything out there to add before we close down the net? It's about 2,200 hours here, and we usually try to shut down around 8 o'clock. Don't have a time limit on this, but it's usually our shutdown time. Anybody with any questions, comments, or suggestions on feeding the antenna through the loop, please come back to KF6Q.
Tom, I got another one.
Mike, you're just overflowing with this stuff. Go ahead.
I learned something, I didn't know. I went to a ham estate sale last Thursday and picked up an antenna analyzer. Now, I already have a 259B antenna analyzer, which I love, but this is a 259. It's one of the older models. I was not aware that the older models have a flashing LED when they're on, and the digits kind of don't stabilize. The last two digits just kind of dance around. The B models, you can dial that in right on the nutshell. As soon as I hooked it up and started playing around with it, checking it out, I thought something was wrong. I called MFJ, and in both cases, the older analyzers have that flashing LED, and the digits are, they're not very stable. And he said, oh, yeah, that's a common problem. So something that I did not know about that MFJ analyzer.
Well, that's kind of a good thing. It's, you know, like they say, made progress for those. I don't think it actually reads out on the digital readout some of the impedance and stuff. I think you have to look at the meters for that. I think that's one thing also. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. It doesn't have all the readouts in digital. It just has the frequency that you dial in digital. Then it's got the ohm meter, and it's got the SWR meter.
Okay, good deal. Well, anyway, and just a little update, too, on Jim's, we have KJ6KDL, his Yagi. We got that all tuned up and ready to go. And he actually added two more directors, which really didn't affect that, to say, of any amount at all to the front as far as the tune-up. And today we got ours. we got Bill Ellian's completed. He's got a 7-element, really nice configured, pretty neat craftsmanship there, pretty neat the way it all came out for him. His was a gamma match. Bill wanted the gamma match, and then Jim, we turned his into a beta match, but either way, they both came out really clean, good range, and pretty good projects for both those two. So we're going to commend them both for doing all their homework on that, I guess. So Anyway, anybody else with anything else to add before we close net, please come back to KF6Q. All right, hearing none, do appreciate everybody out there listening. KE6 United, John, glad to hear you out there. I haven't heard you in a long time. Good talking to you. Glad to see you're out there on the air. And everybody else who's checked in, everybody else who's joined us out there as a listener, really glad to have you there. Always great to know that there's other people out there listening. Even if you're not participating, that's still great. So you're participating by listening. So anyway, we're going to close down, and this will be QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, Net Control for the Tech Tuesday Net, closing the net at 2,000 hours and 5 minutes. Thank you again, Mike and Clint, for all your reports and everybody else who participated, and we'll see you again next Tuesday at 1,900 hours. Returning the repeater to normal use. KF6Q clear.